Beneath the headlines, behind the timelines, there is a story no one wants you to find. Welcome to Some Unapproved Thinking, where forgotten truths, buried patterns, and invisible systems rise to the surface. You weren't crazy. You were just early. Let's begin.
You know, it's always fascinating to me how much of history is either hidden or, well, let's say sanitized. After all, what happens when the narrative we're told doesn't quite add up? Last time, we talked about the removal of public bells and what that might signal about our current world. But today, I want to dive into something even deeper, something that could shake your understanding of Japanese history to its core. Most people don't know that on August 15th, 1945, the exact day Japan's Emperor Hirohito broadcast the Gyoku on Hoso, the so-called dual voice broadcast announcing surrender, American military officials were already inside the Imperial Palace, not to accept the surrender, to erase something. And what most history books won't tell you is that the night before that broadcast, there was a coup attempt, the Kyujo incident. A group of Japanese military officers stormed the Imperial Palace grounds on August 14th, trying to destroy the surrender recording before it could air. They failed. But in the chaos of those 24 hours, coup attempt, surrender broadcast, palace in upheaval, American intelligence teams moved fast. This is Some Unapproved Thinking.
Thank you to our sponsor, the Dark Horse Entrepreneur Podcast. Unlock your potential with the Dark Horse Entrepreneur AI Escape Plan, the podcast empowering hardworking parents to break free from the 9-to-5 grind through AI-powered side hustles. Check them out at darkhorseentrepreneur.com. Now back to the show.
The official story says Japan's imperial records were preserved, protected, archived with reverence by Allied forces. That's what you read in every textbook. Every documentary, every version of history taught in schools worldwide. But declassified documents, real ones, not conspiracy blogs, tell a different story. And the deeper you look, the more you realize we've been told a carefully constructed lie about what those documents actually contained. Here's what happened. During the final weeks of World War II, as American forces closed in on the Japanese mainland, military planners made a decision, a specific decision. They identified certain imperial archives, not all of them, just specific ones, as strategically sensitive. That's the actual language used in the memos. Strategically sensitive. Not dangerous weapons. Not military blueprints. Records. Knowledge. Information so threatening that grown men with clearances decided it had to vanish. On September 2, 1945, when General Douglas MacArthur accepted Japan's surrender aboard the USS Missouri, millions of classified Japanese documents were already in American custody. The National Archives interim reports confirm the scale. Think about that number. That's not a small collection. That's an entire civilization's institutional memory, government records, imperial correspondence, scientific research, biological warfare research. And something else. Something the declassified documents hint at but never quite name directly. The unit doing the actual work on the ground was the Allied Translator and Interpreter Section, ATIS. Their job was officially translation. Their real job in those first weeks of occupation was triage, deciding what the world would be allowed to see. The first document you need to understand is a SCAP directive, declassified under the Nazi War Crimes Disclosure Act and the Japanese Imperial Government Records Disclosure Act, which together forced open some of the most sensitive post-war documentation. These directives state that certain Japanese scientific and medical records would be secured for analysis and segregated from public disclosure indefinitely. Indefinitely. Not for 30 years, not for 50 years, forever. And it gets worse. The directives specifically mention imperial knowledge repositories and order them placed beyond standard archival systems, meaning they weren't filed, they were hidden. In plain institutional sight, but hidden? Here's where most people stop. They see the cover-up, they see the secrecy, and they assume it was about Unit 731, the biological warfare unit the human experimentation, that's what declassified historians point to. That's the acceptable truth. And there's proof of that suppression now. In 2007, the National Archives released over 100,000 pages of previously classified materials related to Japanese imperial government records, documents that had been sitting in locked facilities for over 60 years. If that was the only thing they wanted hidden, why the permanent classification? Why the indefinitely part? But Unit 731 doesn't explain all of it. The answer may lie in documents so obscure that it took alternative historians nearly 40 years to even find a reference to them. The Arisugawa documents. Named after the Arisugawa Nomiya, a real imperial branch family, extinct since 1913, that served for generations as calligraphy and literary instructors to the imperial household, they maintained administrative records, imperial correspondence, cultural materials going back centuries. These weren't military records, they were historical records. Records about Japan's origins, its actual historical timeline, its relationship to neighboring civilizations. In 1947, one memo, exists in the National Archives mentioning these documents specifically. It's addressed to MacArthur from General Charles Willoughby, Chief of Military Intelligence. The same Willoughby who had already arranged immunity deals with Unit 731 researchers and who was simultaneously censoring the Japanese press under occupation authority, a man who understood professionally the value of controlling information. The memo says, and these are the exact words as documented, "The preservation of Arisugawa materials poses significant counterintelligence concerns. Recommend immediate classification and segregation to prevent historical narrative destabilization." Destabilization of history. Not of current military operations, of how people understand their own past. And here's where it gets dangerous. Because if they cared about the quote-unquote narrative of Japanese history, what the public was allowed to believe about Japan's origins, that means they cared about controlling history. Which means other histories were also controlled. American history, European history, the entire post-war understanding of what civilization is, how it developed, why power flows where it flows. You start to see the pattern. The documents don't say outright what was in those imperial records. That's the trap of declassification. They release enough to prove there was a cover-up, but not enough to prove what was covered up. That gap, yeah, that's intentional. Because admitting you destroyed information is less damaging than explaining why the information mattered. In 1951, when Japan's sovereignty was restored under the San Francisco Treaty, negotiated on the American side in large part by John Foster Dulles, there was a condition nobody talks about. Article 11. Article 11 required Japan to accept the judgments of the International Military Tribunal for the Far East. But beyond the treaty text itself, the occupation's practical legacy meant that all pre-1868 Japanese imperial materials already in American hands stayed there. Pre-1868. That's before the Meiji Restoration, before modern Japan existed. They wanted the ancient stuff, the foundational narratives, the proof of what came before the version of Japan they wanted the world to accept. Here's the educational piece people don't realize. Japan's pre-imperial records contained something unique in 1945, a continuous written history going back further than almost any other major civilization, unbroken genealogical records, astronomical observations, trade documentation, migration patterns, documents like the Tenno Kozoku Jitsuroku, the compiled imperial family records, represented the kind of institutional continuity that no Western power could match. And all of it created a framework for understanding human history that didn't center around Europe, that didn't center around the Western world as the inevitable apex of all civilization. Think about why that matters to a post-war American military establishment. You've just won. You're about to reshape the entire global order. Japan's economic future will be decided by Americans. Japan's political system will be rewritten by Americans. Japan's historical narrative, the way Japanese people understand themselves, will be filtered through American permission. And in those imperial archives are records that suggest Japan had sophisticated civilization, knowledge systems, and global influence while Europe was still fragmented and vulnerable. One doesn't need to be a conspiracy theorist to see how dangerous that is to a power structure. You just need to understand how power actually works. It works through narrative control, through who gets to define history, through making certain knowledge strategically sensitive. By 1954, according to declassified memos, approximately 127,000 pages of pre-imperial Japanese records had been analyzed and archived in closed facilities. The remaining materials were determined to have limited historical value. But here's the trap. That determination was made by American military intelligence officers, not Japanese historians, not academics. Intelligence officers deciding which parts of Japan's past were allowed to exist in the historical record. The false floor comes now. Because most conspiracy channels stop here and say America destroyed Japanese history. But that's not what the documents actually show. They show something more sophisticated, more dangerous. They show that America preserved selected Japanese history, the parts that fit a narrative, and destroyed the rest. That means somewhere, in locked facilities or in the custody of the Imperial Household Agency, the real institutional gatekeeper of imperial records that still controls access to this material today, there are materials about Japan's pre-imperial past that the American government decided the world could not know. And if they did this to Japan, if they filtered and controlled the historical narrative of an entire civilization as a condition of post-war occupation, why wouldn't they do it everywhere else? Why wouldn't every colonial power, every occupying force, every military establishment select which histories were strategically sensitive and which were safe for public consumption? The documents don't prove what was in those imperial archives. That's the genius of it. The cover-up is provable. The actual suppressed knowledge is not. You can verify the hiding. You cannot verify the hidden. So your mind fills the gap. And in that gap, certainty dies. Trust in official history dies. And you realize that everything you know about how civilizations developed, how knowledge spread, how the world came to look the way it does, all of it passed through filters, military filters, political filters, and even institutional filters. The Arisugawa documents have never been recovered by independent researchers. No one outside cleared channels has ever verified they exist beyond that single memo. But they're referenced in enough declassified materials that their absence becomes proof of their importance. If they were worthless, why hide them? If they were just administrative records, why classify them forever? You'll never read what was in those documents. Neither will anyone alive today, because the Americans who knew are dead. The Japanese officials who might have testified are dead, and the records themselves are either destroyed or locked in archives so deep that even FOIA requests, even the legislative pressure of the Japanese Imperial Government Records Disclosure Act, hit legal walls. The trap is complete. The knowledge is gone, but the fact of its erasure remains. And that fact, the proof that inconvenient history was systematically removed, that's something no authority can fully explain away. But now knowing all of that, here's what stays with you. Somewhere, governments are still deciding which parts of your past you are allowed to know. This has been Some Unapproved Thinking. Tracy, out.
If this story didn't sit right with you, good. You're not here to be comforted. You're here to see what others overlook. Thanks for exploring Some Unapproved Thinking. Learn more at someunapprovedthinking.com. New episodes drop weekly. Subscribe, share, and keep questioning, because the pattern's still playing out. And next time, we're going deeper.